Sentire Media.
Ciao a tutti and welcome to Venice Talks, a podcast series dedicated to Venice in Italy. I'm your host, Monica Cesarato, a Venetian food and travel blogger. Join me as I share my insider knowledge to help you explore Venice at 360 degrees. In this weekly podcast, we'll dive into the heart of a city, uncovering hidden stories and connecting with the people who make Venice unique. The artisans, the writers, the fashion designers, the bloggers, the journalists, and more. Let's break free from cliché and discover the true essence of Venice, not just the monuments, but the vibrant people, the Venetians. Experience Venice the right sustainable way. You can find me on my blog at www.monicacesarato.com and across all social media platforms. Enjoy the episode and let's journey through Venice together. Welcome back to Venice Talks, Season 2, Episode number 6. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Venice Talks. Today, I have a returning guest that was with us a few weeks ago, and I've got Professor Giulio Bobbo, researcher and a professor of contemporary history. Ciao, Giulio. How are you?
Thank you. Hi, Monica. Glad to hear you again. Doing fine. Just a small correction. I'm not a professor.
Well, listen, you came out of university, so you are a professor.
I graduated from the university, of course, but I'm not teaching.
But you still have title is professor, isn't it? Doctor.
In Italy, you can be called doctor even with a master degree, so even without a PhD. So, yes, in Italy, I can be called Dr. Giulio Bobbo.
And we are in Italy, so you are.
Of course.
Hey, let's give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, they say, right?
Indeed.
Okay, so last time we talked about Iviser and the importance of this association, but I told you I wanted to speak to you about the contemporary history of Venice. And I told you I wanted to talk, since you know so much about it, the famous stepping stones. If you can explain to everybody what they are and why they are so important in Venice as well.
Okay, so when we talk about the stepping stones, that they are called Stolperstein in Germany, they are actually an artistic project of a German artist who is called Gunther Wendig. And he had this idea to create what is called a kind of a diffuse monument. That is not built in a single place for remember a particular event in a particular place, but it's spread all over Europe, replicating always the same feature, that is a small plaque, a brass plaque, that is it is linked to a small concrete block, and in this way it is put on the on the urban floor, so
on the
public ground, in front of the door of a house, of a building, where somebody who was taken away and persecuted by the Nazis was living.
Okay.
So it started in Germany, and then slowly it's starting to expand in all Europe. Okay. With some small exception, if I remember well, they are not allowed in Munich for particular reason related to the situations there. But you can easily see them in all Europe, like Germany, Austria, and all the countries who had been invaded by the Nazis. So the Netherlands, Poland, and Italy as well. The idea is to commemorate, the event, but mostly the person.
Okay, the people, yeah.
There is a sentence that normally it is attributed to Stalin. I don't know if it is true, but it makes sense. The sentence says that the death of a person is a tragedy, the death of a million of person of statistics. It is a statistic. So what is the point? When you talk about the Holocaust or everything that happened with the German Nazi persecution in during the Second World War, really fast you start to talk about numbers. That is important because it allows you to give you the size of the tragedy that went there. But a number, it tends to be really abstract. So the idea of Gunther Wenden is to give back the dignity of the person in every example, when as much as possible, and putting it in a really concrete way, meaning where a person was living. So it is not anymore, for example, in Venice, it is not anymore 185 person, but it is Bartolomeo Meloni,
He's given a
Raffio.
name, he's given a
Yes.
reality to something. It's
Yes.
not just
So how they are doing those
Well,
stones.
first of all, when did he start in Venice?
We started 10 years ago, more or less. And it was yes, this year it is 10 years ago. And it started in this way. In 2010 to 2020 2011, I was able to make a project to follow a project going inside the prison of Venice that is called Santa Maria Maggiore, and I had the possibility to check the registers that were
Oh,
made
the records there.
inside the prison, because when you go into the prison, the first thing that happens to you is you go in the clerk office, and there you are giving a number, and in this number it is written who you are, why you are there, when you enter, why you entered, by order of who, and when you get out, what day you were getting out, if you were get set free or if you were given to somebody else. In this way, we had a source who was giving us, so an official source.
Wait. Because the prison of Venice now was the same prison back during the Second World War
Yes.
then. Ah, okay. I
So
wasn't
the
I was trying to get there. Okay, good.
yes,
All right.
the prison is in Santa Maria Maggiore, that is really close to Piazzale Roma, that is where practically the only place where the cars can arrive in Venice.
Of course,
So I was able to check those huge files. They were huge volumes with more than a meter, almost a meter and a half tall,
Oh,
in which
wow, just like me, 5 feet.
for every person you had his data. So when he was born, who were the parents, where and mostly where they were living.
Was he always a male prison?
Allora, on this it is not completely clear. I know for sure. Allora, there are two things that are for sure.
No, it's only because I was wondering when you found the record, if you only found the records relating to men or there
No,
were records relating to
no.
women. But that's why I was asking.
Allora, now it is an all male prison because there is a second prison in Giudecca for the women. At the time, for what I can see, and they were both male and female named.
That's why I was asking.
So yes, I could see. Even recently we did some checking for some checks, and we found some information. So in this way we were able to get a safe source for understand where those persons were living. So we had the data to use for put the stone at the proper place. So starting from with this data, it was a really intense. If you allow me, I always talked about this anecdote. I knew, having graduated about the resistance in Venice, I knew that when I was arriving on the day of the 6th December 1943, I would start to see all the names of the nation, or in any way, the Jews that were living in Venice, and they were put into the prison. So it was already really hard because you see those names, you see the signature, you see the digital print on it. So it is really,
They become real.
and you multiplicate it for 200, 400, 500. But at some point, what really hit me is that at some point, I noticed that a whole family was coming from the same house where I'm living.
Oh my gosh, that must have
And
been chills.
my family is there from 1969, so and we had any memory of that. So at some point
Of course.
I could not exclude that those people were living literally where I am sleeping,
Yeah, of
eating.
course, of course.
Then after a year, I noticed that no, I heard that those persons were living at the first floor while I'm on the third floor. But
Still.
anyway, any time for that period, and even now, any time that I get out of home, I know that from that same door, a
Somebody
whole
walked out and
family.
never came back.
Yes, because that family was completely wiped out.
Wow.
So this is personal, but in any way, every time that you walk through, now we are talking about Venice, but I'm talking to the persons who are listening to us, and they happen to live in
In
Europe,
Europe,
or
yeah.
possibly in a small or middle or big city in Europe. There is a good chance that they have some stepping stones, stolpersteins in their city. I give you a personal demonstration about that. I went to see my girlfriend. My girlfriend is Dutch. And walking in the one of the first time walking around, I found some stepping stones, because there they had a
Of
small
course.
Jewish communities, and according to the sources, this small community of 50 persons was completely wiped out, so nobody went back.
So back to the 2010, 2011, you went to the prison, you found the records, and then.
Yes, and then
Sorry, I
we
get
put
you
it.
back. I get you because I
Yes,
know you love talking. I get you back on track.
so you, you're completely right. We went. We checked. We did this huge. I did this huge database with all those numbers, and then those addresses and data, and then we use them as a core for. Slowly starting to dedicate to put some to let down to put those stepping stones all around the city. A detail that it is important for me. Obviously, most of them are dedicated to Jewish persons who were living in Venice at the time of their deportation. But they are not the only ones.
Yeah, exactly.
We decided to because we decided to commemorate all the person that for some reason finished
We're
in a
taken.
German in a Nazi concentration camp. And I make a couple of examples. Political prisoners, those were called red triangles, because you know when you were in a German concentration camp, you were wearing a suit, a striped suit, with a symbol who was identifying you immediately for the reason for you were there. So the Jews had the David Star. The political prisoners had a red triangle. And then, at least for what has to do with Italy, a lot of Italian military internees
Oh, okay.
who were a huge number of Italian soldiers and sailors and people from the Air Force who,
Deserters. No.
no,
Oh,
they
no,
were
I'm
not
asking.
deserters.
Okay. No,
No,
I'm asking. Okay.
they were not deservers. The Germans were saying they were deserters, but they were not.
Ah,
They
okay.
were serving. In the army, in the air force, in the navy, when the armistice between Italy and the rest of the allied countries
Yeah, the allies, yeah.
signed the armistice,
Yeah.
and when this happened, Germany invaded Italy and all the areas who were under Italian control.
Okay.
And they captured those persons who were alive until the day before, and they sent a number that is comprised around 600 to 660,000 of them
Okay.
in the German not extermination camp, in the German concentration camp.
See, there were prisoner wars,
No,
prisoners of war.
no,
No,
no.
not even.
That is the
Okay.
point. They were Italian military internees, because if you are a prisoner
Okay.
of war, you are entitled to some really particular rights, like the
Okay.
rights to be to don't be hurt, to be fed properly, to have a constant exchange with the Red Cross. You can get goods and food and clothes from the Red
Okay.
Cross. But the German didn't want the Italians to have those rights, so they stripped them of those rights and they called it in another
Ah,
way. And those name was
okay.
Italian military internees.
I didn't know this.
So
Okay.
they were The Germans were treating with were treating fairly well those who were considered by them prisoners of war. Make an example: all the Allied prisoners, mostly so Americans, British, in some cases French, they were treated as prisoners of war, and then they were treated accordingly the Geneva Convention. But, for example, the Polish people, the Soviet soldiers, and the Italian soldiers were not recognized as that. The Soviet soldiers were killed in millions. The Italian military internees, they were not treated as harshly as the Soviet soldiers, but still, the 10% of them didn't return from the camps.
Okay, so you decided to do all of them. My question is, how come since you had the list, because you're doing so many stepping stones every year, how come you just didn't do them all in one go? And you just do
Allora,
them every so many, every
there
year?
are several reasons. One reason is that you want to transform this ceremony in something that is returning every year during the Memory Day, because we decided to dedicate those stones during in the days of the Memory Day, so around the 26th of January. So, because then you can involve the schools and the citizens. Another time is that, like everything, those stones has a price. And if you consider only the Jewish population, we are the people who were taken away. There are more than 250. Then you put all the other Italian military internees, the political prisoners. So if you do it all in once, it is difficult even from a logistic point of view, because then in Italy, in Venice, we don't have normal roads. We have
Of course.
those stones who are on the ground, and you have to send first workers to cut them in a way to make fit those stones. So it is, but it is a fact that sooner we are really moving forward. And right now, if I remember well, there are 185 stones.
So how many do you do more or less every year? Four, five?
No, between 10 to 12, more or less.
And when you do it like an itinerary. I mean, is a whole
Yes.
day that you, no, a few days that you dedicate to this and you have like a proper itinerary.
We do normally we do it one for Venice, another for Mestre. In some other days we went to Chioggia, because even there were persons who were deported. But even the mainland, obviously, we are reconstructing what was the reality of Venice in
Of course.
1943. So at
Of
that
course.
time, the majority of the people in the province were living in Venice, and Mestre was much smaller. Mestre is the
Of course.
town out of Venice in the mainland. It was smaller than now, and but yes, normally we do it in a way that if somebody wants can follow all those
And
dedications.
they're not, or at least in Venice, they're not all in the ghetto because I saw them outside of
No,
the ghetto as well. They're spread
because
all over the city.
you know the ghetto was the ghetto. So the ghetto was the Jewish quarter of Venice until Napoleon closed it, or rather opened it in when he arrived. After that, the Venetian Jews started to go to live where they wanted, so they were everywhere. And as I told you, we are not commemorating only the Jews, but even
Of course, of course.
the prisoners.
All
So
the others.
if you the people who are interested in that, they can go to our website, www.ivez.it, and they will see that there is a virtual map that is showing every stone that we put down.
Cool. That's very cool.
And for every stone, you have as a kind of information with the picture and all the data that we have about that person.
I mean, that must be heartbreaking when you went through all the records. I can just
It
imagine.
was a difficult experience.
I can imagine. So let's talk instead about Venice contemporary, and let's talk about Because everybody always talks, the history of Venice, everybody always talks about the Middle Ages, about,
Of course,
when Venice was
yes.
at its apex and the
Certo.
1700s, blah. But very little is said about Venice. And it's very interesting because when I walk sometimes with my guests or even with friends, and we're talking about, oh, what was Venice in the Second World War? And they're very surprised, when I said, well, yeah, well, this is what's happening. And they look at me and say, oh, really? So, what was happening in Venice during the Second War and just after the Second World War? I mean, why was Venice different from other cities? Apart from, of course, the obvious reasons, but it wasn't just that.
Allora, the point is this. If you talk about the Second World War, even in Venice, we have to put an important date that is divided in two periods. Italy entered into the war in the 10th of June 1940, and the war finished in Italy around late April, early May 1945. The divide is the 8th of September 1943. That is what, as I told you before, the date in which the armistice that has been signed between Italy and the Allied forces was made public. At that point, Nazi Germany invaded Italy. The fascists returned together with the Germans, and then we had the start of the resistance. So, if you talk about Venice. The period between 1940 and 1943, it is mostly uneventful. Meaning there was a French attempt to bomb the industrial plant of Marghera the first during the first very first nights of the war, but it was not successful. And after that, it was a city really well behind the front, even when the Allied countries landed in Sicily. The thing started, so there was not a lot of change. There was something that was shared with all the rest of the country. At some point, you started to have lack of food, or it was difficult to get things, but nothing of particularly traumatic or tragic. The thing started to change in 1943 because what happened? Even Venice was invaded by the Germans. The fascists returned to the power, and you started to see, as I told you before, the first thing that you could see were all those Italian soldiers and sailors who were arrested by the Germans and sent to the railway station to be sent to Germany. And then, after some time, you could start to see that the Germans were now behaving as they were the one in charge, because they were, and the fascists were just helping them to keep the occupation against the Allied countries and the resistance. That is another important thing, because even in Italy, even sorry, even in Venice, like in the rest of Italy, we had the resistance. What we call with the resistance in Italy, it is a movement. A political and military movement made by men and women, people of every age, of every political party who was not fascist, who took the arms and for fight, struggle against the fascists and the Nazis. And that started even in Venice. There were some actions who were more important, who for example, there were some fires, some attempts. In some cases, there were some fascists who were killed, partisans.
I saw some videos, Giulio, on YouTube, of you can see them, the partisans trying to shoot. I can see them coming out of the wall shooting
Those images were they were
towards
made
the end, yeah.
immediately. We think that most of them, they were made immediately after the liberation of Venice for
Oh,
try to propose
propaganda.
how it was. No, it was to see how it was the actual how it was the actual insurrection and uprising of Venice.
Ah, right,
So you
okay.
see real person that actually participated to the uprising of Venice, that they are staging, like it happened many times, When you talk about combat cameras, so practically war footage, even when you see them in any situation, most of the cases were recreated after, because there are really few ones who were showing actual combat. Because you see, to go around with a heavy and bulky camera,
Of course.
it is pretty dangerous.
Of course.
But it is a fact that in they are showing was something that happened. So for make it really short. The Italian resistance, the Venetian resistance, started to move in a clandestine way, so trying to gather information to send to the Allied countries, gather weapons and equipment that could be used against the fascists and the Germans. In some cases, they did some sabotage. So, for example, burning down the list of the people who were supposed to be called for the fascist draft. And there were even some properly military actions, like, for example, in at least two cases, some fascists were shot and killed in the street, and that prompted to a quick reprisal from the fascists and the Germans. And that it was a slow build-up that brought at the end to an uprising. And in the last days of the war, because it was a really delicate moment in which you had to take over the city from those who were controlling it, so the fascists and the Germans, without allowing the Germans to set it on fire, because that's what they wanted to do. They already put explosives and mines all around the harbor, the bridge that is connecting the city with the rest of the world, the arsenal. Now, talking about the arsenal. The arsenale is it was during the Venice Republic was the place where the sea power of Venice was built.
Of
So a
course.
huge dockyard where they were building ships. During the Second World War, it was not anymore so important, but it was still the biggest naval base in Venice, and it was full of explosives. So imagine if the Germans were managing to set it on fire, the explosion would have destroyed half of the city.
Venice was bombed, was it?
Allora,
By the Allies, wasn't it?
allora,
By mistake.
no, 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 no.
No,
Venice.
by mistake, I'm saying,
Allora, Venice was indeed bombed by Allied planes in at least two occasions. The first one was what we think was a target of opportunity, meaning that some fighter bombers who were passing by saw in the bacino di San Marco, so the huge body of water that is in front of San Marco, in San Marco Square, they saw a ship that, by the way, it was a Red Cross ship, so it was a hospital ship, so it should not be attacked, but they
Darn,
did it anyway. And they bombed that ship, and they strafed with machine guns some boats of the public transport, and they killed a dozen of people. The second one, so we don't know how much it was planned or unplanned. For how it was done, we think it was somebody who practically had to drop the bombs and found this target that was illegal. Because when a ship is painted white with red crosses and it is not it is it it has its lights on, it means that it is a hospital ship and you cannot
Of
attack
course.
it.
Of course.
But the Allied countries attacked the hospital ship in many cases during the Second World War. Anyway,
Okay.
the second one was a planned operation, that it was even a name, Operation Bowler. And
Okay.
it was a really particular attack made for destroy a single ship who was in the harbor, in the new Stazione Marittima that is on the back of the city near Piazza Le Roma.
Oh, facing the Giudecca,
A bit after Giudecca.
but more or less.
More or less there. They knew that there was this ship called Otto Reinhard who was unloading explosives. And they understood that they were taking out explosives that could be used for sabotage. So they decided to destroy it. But we have to remember another thing. It was March 1945. And more or less a year before, there had been the destruction of Monte Cassino, who was practically an old convent. Actually, the convent where the Benedictine order was created, and they destroyed a high medieval convent for nothing. And that public much public outrage in the light world. So they did this operation in a really particular way. So they didn't send bombers, but they sent fighter bombers belonging to two squadrons, one Australian and another British, who were specialized in point bombing, meaning hitting on the front line. So they had to be really effective and really precise because they had to hit enemy troops who were really close to friendly troops. So they were not bombing level bombing, but they were diving with their fighters. They were dropping bombs really low, and so they were really precise.
Whoa. Okay.
And actually, they did a really good job because they did destroy only that ship. But what they could not foresee is that the shockwave of the, imagine a warship full of actually who explodes. The shockwave went all through the city.
Wow.
And it hit a house that was really nearby in the area of Santa Marta, and it collapsed. And more or less 20 persons who were inside died. But they didn't die because they were hit by a bomb.
Yeah, but they died because of a house that fell down.
Because
oh, wow.
because the it was like an earthquake, and the house went down after them.
Oh, wow.
And the what is really interesting is that we have pictures of this this attack, because the planners of this operation, they were really nervous because they had been told that it was not acceptable to create damages to the artistic monuments of Venice.
Yeah,
so
of
they so together with the fighters who did the attack, they brought a Spitfire recognized plane. So the Spitfire was a fighter plane of the Second World War, a British fighter
of
plane.
Course. Yeah,
and some Spitfires were treated, were converted into reconnaissance plane.
Okay.
So he kept to make pictures of the wall attack.
Oh,
and
wow.
you see these pictures, and those are actual pictures of
oh.
the planes diving for the attack. And then you see the explosion. Just for give you the idea, this plane was cruising over the city at around 5,000 meters.
Wow.
And still, the picture that is showing the explosion, it is blurred, because even the plane was moved from the shockwave, even
wow.
if it was 5 kilometers high in the sky.
Is it true? I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but somebody told me that all the windows, or many windows in Venice.
No, it is absolutely true.
Oh my God.
They all went, the newspapers, actually the only newspaper who was left at the time, the Gazzettino, was writing, don't throw away the shreds, the shattered glasses. Keep them together. Bring them to the oven, to the glass oven, so they can do it, because it is difficult to find
glass. Oh my God!
I mean, the situation at the end of the war, it was so wrecked that even to find the sand for creating glass was difficult.
Oh my God! I mean, from a city that makes glass.
Yes.
It's
so
incredible.
So they told them, bring the glass with you, so they can it can be more
recycled,
easily melted and made for you. But
oh.
Yes. So, and even some stained glass who were pretty ancient were destroyed. But.
Oh, wow.
But at the end, they could they were not completely lost. They had to change the glass itself.
Yeah, of course.
So that was the biggest bombing that was made in Venice during the Second World War. If you talk about the First World War, the situation was pretty different.
Wow, this is so interesting. See, and so little is said about Venice during this period. I mean, for one reason or for another, or maybe because everybody wants to know about let's say the most famous times of the Venetian Republic and so on.
You know, sorry if I interrupt you a moment.
No, go.
The mission of Iveser, of the institute that we talked the last time, it is exactly that, to tell to people, look, that the history of Venice doesn't finish with Napoleon. Even if Venice was not anymore an independent city, yet it was a really important city from a social, economic, industrial, and political way. And it was a protagonist of the 19th century or the 20th century.
Yeah, because I was listening to one other interview you did with somebody, and where you were talking about Venice during, as in, not so much from the point of view of being, about the political side, but the point of the actual industrial and the economic economical part, how much Venice was important during the Second World, because there were a lot of industries and
Allora,
in the cities.
If you talk about the historical center of the city, you had some activities who were relevant for the war effort. The first example that comes into my mind, it was a factory in Giudecca who was called Jungans, and it was created the timers and primers for bombs.
Okay.
Then you had some smaller dockyards who were making small reparations, but mostly if you talk about Venice as a city, what was really important was Porto Marghera. Because Porto Marghera, who was not so far, just for give you an idea, I don't remember if the 70 or the 90% of the aluminium, and you know how much important was aluminium at the time for the war, the 70%, in any way, the majority of the aluminium made in Italy was made in Venice.
Oh, wow.
Or better,
okay.
sorry.
In Marghera.
In Porto Marghera.
Wow. No, I didn't know this. Oh.
And in fact, it was bombed. The bombers were more or less assembling a way around, arriving from Chioggia, and they were traveling in a way that the bombing run was from the lagoon going up to Mestre. In fact, that's where the biggest destruction happened.
Okay.
So Porto Marghera, the small city of Marghera and Mestre were, well, they were not hit hard like cities like Dresden or Munich.
Of course.
But still, they suffered a lot of destruction and the civilian casualties, because actually they were a legitimate military target.
Of course. I remember my dad used to tell me he used to have his memories of his planes and having to run away, and when they heard the people arriving.
You know, I like to say that you can understand the buildings who were destroyed in Marghera. Looking at them, because you will see in Marghera, that is this small town built near Mestre, you will see some really nice and pleasant Art Deco small villas who were the original ones.
And they're beautiful.
And they are really beautiful. And then perhaps the house that is next to one of them, it is an ugly concrete building made in the 50s and the 60s.
Yes, exactly.
It is there because the original one was hit by a bomb.
Ah, okay, right. Okay, didn't reason on
because
that.
Marghera,
I didn't think of that, yes, of
Marghera
course.
From was a really interesting example, because it was built all together like a garden city. It was supposed to host the workers that had to go to work in the factories, and actually didn't happen practically, because at the end the workers who were working in Porto Marghera were people from the mainland. My grandfather was one of them. And they every day they were taking the bicycle, and they were bicycling for 5 to 20, 30 kilometers.
Yeah, many
and,
were
and
from
then,
Mirano, Spinea,
exactly.
The Riviera del Brenta. Of course.
My grand-grandparents was working at Vetro Coco, who was a factory who was creating industrial glass and the coke coal. And he was coming from Mira, then from Oriago.
Where I come from, where I am. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, so probably next door to, probably not far from where I live.
Probably.
Listen, Giulio, where can people find you if they want to listen to you and see, you know, read more stuff or even follow? Because I know you do some kind of tours or something.
If they are not coming to Venice, but they want to see in depth what we were talking about, they can go to see our website. Originally, it was all in Italian. Now we are slowly translating part of it in English. It is, as I told you, www.iveser.it. And there you have a lot of information about our activity, our activities, our projects, our former exhibitions, and mostly the virtual map.
Okay.
I developed more than 20 years ago by now, it makes me feel old, but I developed a series of itineraries, so guided itineraries through the city. Personally, I created the ones who are talking about the resistance.
Okay.
And I replicated it for the Venice Biennale. I worked with the artist who ran the German Pavilion 2 years ago, who is a conceptual artist called Maria Eichhorn from Germany, and we proposed some of those tours. But we can propose them as well with the Institute, and we are doing it mostly for we do it mostly for the schools. But sometimes we get even some requests from people who are living in Italy and abroad, and we have. I can talk. Sometimes there are small issues because, as you know, in Italy, English is spoken a bit less than in other countries. So I am able to speak English. Another person is able to speak English, but in some cases we have some tours who are created by persons who are really not skilled in English, so that could be a problem. But if we talk about the First World War and the Second World War,
You are the person.
we are able to help.
That's good. Julia, it was so nice talking to you, and I'm pretty sure that I'll find something else to ask you. And I'll want you back later on. And I'll thank you so much again for talking to us and give us so many insights about Venice.
You're welcome. I'm glad to talk with you. And if there are other curiosities, perhaps you get some feedbacks from people who are following. I will be happy to reply as soon as I am able to.
Please let us know if you got any questions. Let us know in the comments when we publish this episode. Thank you again. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.
A big thank you to Giulio for the chat. You can find Giulio at www.iviser.it and on all social medias at iviser. Thank you again for listening. Venice Talks Podcast is a production of Sentire Media, created, produced, and hosted by me, Monica Cesarato. Follow Venice Talks wherever you get your podcast, and if you want to book a food tour or a cooking experience with me, you can find me over at www.monicacesarato.com and on all social medias with the handle at Monica Cesarato, where you can follow my adventures around Venice. And don't forget, if you love this episode, please rate it and leave a review. It's very much appreciated.
Sentire Media.
Hey, podcast producers and show hosts. Do you want to join a podcast network that celebrates all things Italian? At Sentire Media, we understand the allure of Italy and its unique culture. Our devoted team of hosts and producers are all driven by their shared passion for Italy. And we work tirelessly to create the best lifestyle podcasts and content that will whisk you away to the very heart of Italy. With us, you can savor the mouth-watering flavors, get lost in the stories from the past, break down the cultural barriers, and truly immerse yourself in the vibrant traditions of this intoxicating country. If you have a great podcast idea or are already in production and would like to join Sentire Media, head over to sentiremedia.com, that's sentiremedia.com, and find out how to submit your show.